Hey there, and welcome to today's episode of Daily Musings. This is Alicia, and I'm going to kick off the week with a discussion about mandatory vaccines. This is something that sort of like when I discussed politics a couple weeks ago, it's not going to make everyone happy. But the way that I want to talk about this is in a way that is understanding of everyone from all walks of life. I don't want to present strong opinions that are emotion-based. I just want to talk about facts. Now, and a really important disclaimer for this is that I will be talking a little bit about COVID and vaccination in addition to the history of vaccine mandates. So anytime that you listen to a random layperson discuss these issues, you should be wary. I want you to think critically about what I'm saying because I might not know what I'm talking about. What are my medical credentials? I'm just a woman who does a lot of reading. So please, please, please do your own research from trusted sources and take everything I say with a massive grain of salt because, again, I am not a medical professional and I might not know what I'm talking about. And that's something that we should think every time we listen to a person's opinion. Regardless of who they are and how much we trust them. So this discussion is going to be about the history of vaccine mandates and just some of my thoughts as they relate to what's currently happening in my neck of the woods anyway. Different regions are having different approaches to how to deal with the pandemic. But basically what it comes down to is there are a lot of things that are worth being critical towards the government about. I mean, there's a lot that should be concerning us over the next 20 to 50 years as important decisions are made and we face unprecedented rates of global change. So things like, you know, the different world powers, surveillance capitalism, artificial intelligence, climate change, these are the things that I worry about. So it's easy to find patterns when it comes to distrust of the government. We can cite plenty of instances where the government's let us down. But requiring people to wear masks and to show proof of vaccination is not a 1984-esque slippery slope. It's not indicative of the government taking control. The big reason that I think this is that, first of all, vaccines have not been made mandatory, but they have been made mandatory in the past. In other words, the government was getting all 1984, a century before 1984, so this is nothing new. And most of us actually have a lot more freedom nowadays, not less, even though, you know, in recent, we have less freedom than we did 2 years ago. But in the scheme of outbreaks and pandemics, we have more freedoms than we have historically. So let's back up. So this is coming about because Canadian provinces have introduced something like a passport vaccine to combat what's our pretty deadly fourth wave. So explanation's sake, I live in Saskatchewan, and our fourth wave is worse than any other point of the pandemic. It's a worse wave than the first, second, or third since the start of the pandemic, which is also crazy considering that a lot of people are now vaccinated. So that basically means for us and for other places in Canada, and maybe in the world, is that there are a few establishments that you can't enter without proof of vaccination. So not everything. So you can go to a lot of public places still, but notably gyms and restaurants you can't go to without proof. And this means a sit-down restaurant, fast food is still fine. Employers also, depending on where you work, mandate vaccines as well. So what I want you to know right now is that I'm not 100% for this measure. I'm not rah-rah. Vaccine passports are a great idea. I get why they're done, and I would probably come down if I had to choose that it's probably a better idea than a worse idea, but there are things that are done poorly with it. So for example, should a restaurant worker lose their job because they don't want to get vaccinated? And that's a really murky ethical question. So my biggest problem with this new system is that for the average person here, COVID tests are very expensive, so $100. So let's say you're this hypothetical waiter. If your option is between getting a $100 negative COVID test every few days or a vaccine or lose your job, what are you going to choose? I mean, it's a bad choice. A better choice maybe, and something that I think would be useful if our government were able to pull off is affordable rapid COVID tests that anyone can buy at the drugstore so that you're actually, you know, having some kind of real option because who's going to spend that kind of money on a regular basis? So I am disappointed to say that I live in a province with the lowest vaccine rate in Canada. So I think our fully vaccinated population sitting around 70% right now. And we know from science that it is the safest way to protect yourself from COVID and other people too. So over a billion vaccines have been administered worldwide. So we know that it's safe, safer than getting COVID. So our premier does, like, what he wants to do is put pressure on individuals to get their vaccines because he wants to reduce the burden on our healthcare system. For example, Saskatchewan and Alberta require the help of healthcare workers from other provinces right now. We're getting people to come in. The military is even getting involved. Important surgeries are being postponed. Healthcare worker burnout is a real thing, and on. These are already stories you're familiar with. And it is true that those without the vaccination are driving the fourth wave. 80% of people in our hospitals right now are unvaccinated. The more people who get vaccinated, the less burden there is on the healthcare system. It's so simple. But in other ways, it's not that simple. So that's why I wanted to discuss a little bit of backstory, a little bit of history on vaccine mandates, which, by the way, is not what our government is doing at this point. Our government is taking a strongly pushing but not mandating approach. Looking to history gives us some perspective, and for me at least, quells anxieties about governmental control, which tends to be one of the root reasons that people avoid vaccines or are wary about them. So let's go back in time to smallpox. Smallpox was the worst virus of all time. It's killed over 500 million people in its long tenure on the planet, and perhaps not surprisingly, it was also one of the first vaccines ever developed and administered widely. The Vaccination Act of 1853 ordered mandatory vaccine for infants up to 3 months old, and then in 1867, it extended the age requirement to up to 14 years, and they did add penalties for vaccine refusal. These laws, and I'll talk about what those penalties are momentarily, but the laws were met with immediate resistance from some people who demanded the right to control their bodies and those of their children. And that's when you had the Anti-Vaccination League and the Anti-Compulsory Vaccination League being formed in response to these mandatory laws. You had a bunch of anti-vaccination journals springing up around the same time as well. So let's talk about what mandatory vaccination meant in this case. It did not mean that governments could force anyone to get a vaccine. In this case, governments could issue fines, but forcibly vaccinating someone against their will would be, to quote a researcher on this, cruel and inhumane to the last degree. No one is suggesting that that be an option. But let's go back to a notable case in 1905. It was the Jacobson versus Massachusetts case. This resulted in a landmark decision that established the constitutionality of mandatory vaccine laws when they are necessary for the public health or safety, and when the community is under the pressure of a great danger. So basically, the Supreme Court ruling came after a smallpox epidemic in Cambridge. So they mandated vaccines, and then there was a pastor named Henning Jacobson. He refused to get the vaccine. He basically cited that he'd had bad reactions to past ones, and as such, he was fined $5. And just for context, that's about $150 today. He appealed the fine, took it to court, the highest court, in fact, and claimed that the order infringed on his 14th Amendment right to liberty, but he lost. Justices sided with the state in a 7-2 vote. So, again, it's important to underline that these mandatory vaccination laws are for when it's necessary for public health or safety, and when the community is under the pressure of a great danger. So that's the important part to underline here. And again, no one's forcing anyone to get vaccines, and not in the past either, but there was a fine issued. But of course, after 50 years of protesting, the commission ruled that vaccination protected against smallpox. Everyone agreed with that. But they did suggest removing penalties for not vaccinating. And then we had the Vaccination Act of 1898, which removed penalties, included a conscientious objector clause. So, for example, parents who didn't believe in the safety or efficacy could get an exemption certificate and, you know, not have their kid be vaccinated, basically. And then we had in 1927, a study from the U.S. Public Health Service found that 13 states had laws saying mandatory vaccination was a thing, 4 had laws prohibiting mandatory vaccination, and 11 states required vaccinations for getting into public schools. But this changed, And mandates became much more widespread in the 1950s when there was a deadly outbreak of polio. And everyone just had a change of heart. Not everyone, of course, but a lot of people had a change of heart regarding vaccines. So now, when we're talking the US and many places in the world, all 50 states have some sort of law requiring certain vaccines for students, at least certain ones. And then you can have exemptions on medical reasons, and some also grant religious exemptions. 17 states allow parents to opt out based on personal or philosophical beliefs. So basically, the disagreement is often over whether a person who's unvaccinated does pose a threat to others, and what's the likelihood and the magnitude of that threat. Most people justify mandatory vaccination as preventing harm to others, and there's a really strong ethical case to be made there, particularly with extremely contagious viruses like, say, the measles. But what about COVID, which isn't as deadly and it isn't as contagious, even though it's both? I mean, it's probably killed about 10 million people worldwide, adjusting for counting statistics. But the death rate from COVID is less than 1% overall. I mean, it's much less than that for healthy young people, much more than that for sick and elderly people. But again, the first thing to note, again, is that the government is not actually mandating vaccines like they've done in the past. What they're just trying to do is make life more difficult if you don't get them. And I don't believe it's because they want to control you. It's because a functioning healthcare system is vital to a nation, and death is really bad for the economy. And some people in power actually care about people, even if it's difficult to believe that, because our government isn't some abstract entity. It's an institution made up of people. And some of those people are good people, and some of those people are bad people. Some care, some don't. But we look at the government like it's this blob sometimes, like this big monster, and we forget that it's people. Government is people. And sometimes the government's decisions aren't great. So if someone had to choose between their job and a vaccine, I don't think that's much of a choice at all, and I disagree with that. I think the question to ask is the risk of COVID so high enough to justify it? Or would affordable negative tests suffice to cover the 20 to 30% of the over 12 population who don't want vaccines for one reason or another? And what if people's reasons for opting out of vaccines is based on shaky speculation as opposed to science and fact? What do you do about that? I mean, I'm just asking questions that I don't think have clear-cut answers. Another thing to remember is it probably won't be this way forever. So the thing is that, here's the thought, once we start using vaccine passports, we'll get used to them quickly, and then they'll be integrated into society, and we'll be using them forever, maybe. But I think it's also just as likely, and maybe even more so, that once the fourth wave eases, restrictions will too. My province removed all restrictions in the summer. Basically, I just took the summer off. And we didn't hear from them again until a few weeks ago, even as cases were rising and the healthcare system started to feel the pressure. And now we're here. So it's really difficult for me to imagine our government hanging on to these restrictions any longer than is absolutely necessary. I don't think that vaccine passports are going to be a forever thing, but it's easy to think that it could be a slippery slope. And I understand that line of reasoning. But again, I really want to emphasize, we've been here before. We've been in the mandate world before, and we're not in the mandate world now. So this is not a 1980s. Before situation. This is not a, the escalating and diminishment of human rights. This is trying to weigh the pros and cons of freedoms. Is it worthwhile to give people more freedom to then give other people less freedom? So for example, your freedom to not get a vaccine could impact a healthcare worker's freedom. It could impact a family's freedom if their child has to be pulled out of school. It could impact a family's freedom if someone dies or someone gets sick. That's not their free choice to get sick. So it is a difficult, murky area. When 20 to 30% of the population is unvaccinated, and 80% of patients in hospitals are unvaccinated, and children are getting sick in schools and are getting intermittently shifted to online learning again, I'd say those are sufficient reasons to put pressure on people to get the vaccine or deal with the inconvenience. Because ultimately, it's really inconvenient for nurses and doctors and families with children and immunocompromised individuals and loved ones of the dying and dead, too.